So nice to sit with you all this morning. Actually, before I get going, I want to just take a moment to just acknowledge, as I mentioned before, the loss of another young African-American man in Minnesota, Dante Wright, who was shot, I think, on Sunday. He was shot in Brooklyn, Minnesota, which I believe is about 16 miles away from the courthouse where George Floyd's trial is happening, and just wanting to send thoughts of justice and peace and hope to the communities there that are really suffering. And just to hope also that here in the States, we can find a way through to a more just criminal justice system. So we're going to go from that topic that has some charge and complexity and long history to another subject. For those of you who know me and have sat with me for years, almost every tax day, I talk about money. And this has been true, I think, about the 15 years I've been part of this group. And although I don't think we did it last year because I was probably we're still too much in COVID beginnings. So wanting to talk today about money, as for those of you not in the States, here in America, it's taxes are due today, although they're not because of COVID. But this time it has a history of being a time where there can be a lot of stress around money. Some of you know, Amir, I know you're with me on one of the day-longs for the women's a day-long on money as a spiritual path for women. And I also taught another day long with a friend of mine about money and how do we really allow ourselves to fold in our relationship to money into our practice. It can really be one of those things like, oh no, I don't want to talk about that. When really it can be so beneficial to hold it and perhaps see it through the lens of the Dhamma, both in terms of our suffering around it, the stories we tell around it, and wanting to name the Buddha was really clear about his teachings about wealth. I can read from this great book, The Buddha's Teachings on Social and Communal Harmony, if only from my perspective, if only we were kind of organized this way under these principles, but in terms of seeking wealth, and he was very much of the mind of, yeah, money's good. If you have the capacity to make money, yeah, make money. Make money, take care of yourself, take care of your family, take care of those who are doing good in the world. The householder who seeks wealth righteously without violence and makes himself happy and pleased and shares it and does meritorious deeds and uses that wealth without being tied to it, infatuated with it, or blindly absorbed in it, seeing the danger in it, understanding the escape, he may be praised on the four grounds: that he seeks it righteously without violence, makes himself happy and pleased, and uses the wealth and does meritorious deeds. So it's part of this worldview of what gifts do we have, to what ends do we use them, and if we can use them to make money, by all means do so. Take care of yourself, take care of your family, and offer the money. And indeed, the Dhamma system is very much based on this. Those men and women in robes need the support of the lay people, the householders who are working to in the traditional Buddhist countries where this is part of the fabric of the culture. The money is used to support the monastics. It's here true, but it's here also, but a little bit different. Atul, if you could pull up the New Yorker cartoon, please. So this cartoon is a man talking to a little boy. This is money. Get ready to worry about it for the rest of your life. If that resonates with anybody, thank you. This sense of, and notice too in the body is when I've said, we're going to talk about money today. If it's just like, oh God, this is the day I came. We're going to talk about this. So just noticing, paying attention to what the sensations of the body may be, and bringing this topic up from Mary Oliver, I worried a lot. Will the garden grow? Will the rivers flow in the right direction? Will the earth turn as it was taught? And if not, how shall I correct it? Was I right? Was I wrong? Will I be forgiven? Can I do better? Will I ever be able to sing? Even the sparrows can do it, and I am, well, hopeless. Is my eyesight fading, or am I just imagining it? Am I going to get rheumatism, lockjaw, dementia? Finally, I saw that worrying had come to nothing, and I gave it up, and I took my old body and went out into the morning and sang. So acknowledging it might not be quite so easy to just to step away, step out from under the worries we have about money, but I'm hoping in some way discussion today can allow us to see that worry more clearly and be able to work with it again through the lens of the teachings here. As I have shared before, in Buddhist psychology, there are three types: a greed type, an aversive type, and a deluded type. And I think some of you know well that I'm definitely the greed type. So if you could see where I'm sitting, there's papers everywhere, and sort of trying to, in some ways, condense a day long into 20 minutes, half an hour. So we'll see how I do. There might be a lot of information, and just take what comes. Don't worry about it. Tolan is graciously going to put all the references together. So if it lands, great. If you miss it, don't worry about it. I want to share just some statistics about women and money, particularly. 90% of women report feeling insecure when it comes to personal finance. Only 10, the flip of that is 10% of women say they feel financially, extremely financially secure. And half of all women say they fear losing everything they have and becoming a bag lady in the street. This is not true. From men. Men do not worry about becoming bag men on the streets, but we do. Money is almost 20 times more likely than sex to be the biggest source of conflict in marriages. 1 in 5 women report having a secret stash of savings their husbands don't know about it. Some of you know this, but for me, the teaching about money really came because of it was such a challenging issue in my own marriage. And after, through the divorce, started teaching. So those of you know, taught daylongs on divorce, on anger and forgiveness. So anyone could sort of track the trajectory of my life in that time. But this ability to, what I needed to do was a deep dive and understanding what is my relationship with money and how did it spin out the way it did in my marriage. And it's been a wonderful journey, hard, painful. And I'm also avoidant. type. So it was really to be able to open up to the importance of understanding and unpacking, well, what is my relationship to money? And again, I'm going to keep saying this, allowing the teachings here to really support a view of a relationship to money. And I've said before that the bridge, so to speak, of Buddhism, the pillars are that of the first one is dana. If you imagine a bridge with three pillars from one shore to the next, and the first pillar is that of dana, of generosity, that we need to open our hearts before we can take these practices on. So this practice of opening and being in the flow of giving and receiving, of dana, of generosity. The second pillar, which drops the deepest into the river, is that of sila, integrity, living ethically, to live the life of the blameless. And the third bhavana, the third pillar, is that of mindfulness and concentration. And I'm going to flip the order of these three, but to be able to hold these three pillars as a way of relating to money. So if we start with sort of the thinking and the mindfulness, being able to pay, to consider how is it we think about money and what are the stories we tell ourselves about money. Bear with me just a moment. Actually, sorry. All right. This is you. The spiritual path is to wake up, open your heart, quiet the mind, still the body. This is the ecstasy, and then comes the laundry. But what about the bills, the rent, the mortgage, health insurance, car insurance, those trips back east to see my dying mom? The heating bill is how much? What do we do in this place? Sky high rents and houses we can't afford. Well, maybe you can. How do we act in this land of the haves and have nots, a chasm growing day by day? Wait, where is this going? This wheel of samsara that spins on the axis of not enough, of grasping, needing more, wanting more and more. Is this the story I tell myself? That there is not enough, that I am not enough, I haven't done enough, I'm not smart enough, not strong enough, not pretty enough, not worth enough, not good enough, not loved enough. Oof. You know, no amount of money is going to fill that void. So let's wait again and take a breath and feel this body sitting here, feel this ground beneath these feet, this chest rising, this chest falling. Feel, imagine the heft of the sword of insight cutting through that tired old story that keeps you small. Feel, sense the brightening of your awakening heart that dazzles and shines and laughs and says, this is enough. There is enough. This is you. This is you. This way that the lack, the scarcity mentality can play out through the way we relate to money, that money in itself is blameless. It is a flow. It is a currency that runs through our life. A quote that money, I may not be loaded, but money is. Was there so much baggage to the notion of money, whether we come to it through our family's history, the relationships our parents and grandparents had about money. Here in the States, where there's such astonishing inequities in terms of race and affordability and access to money, that plays a role in the narrative we have about money. I did want to come back to some statistics, just because it's, again, looking at women. This is the right thing. 14% of women live in poverty. 1/3 of all women are wealth poor in terms of assets. In 1999, a typical white family has $81,000 in wealth. A typical Black family, $8,000. By race, married Asian women rank the highest. Whites are next. Single men and women, whites with the most wealth. Hispanics with the least. Asian women make 53 cents for every dollar. Asian women have 53 cents for every dollar of wealth made by male counterparts. White women, 46 cents. Black women, 42 cents. Hispanic, zero. More than 1/2 of single Hispanic women have no wealth at all. Close to 1 out of 3 women is wealth poor. No wealth at all or negative wealth. The wealth escalator, the sense of financial fringe benefits, employee pensions, paid sick leave, health insurance, favorable tax codes, government benefits, social security, unemployment insurance, welfare, these invisible means of wealth that men, white men, often have such more access to this escalator than women do. The deck is stacked against mothers, the motherhood wealth tax that is borne by all mothers who are single or married. Mothers receive a 4% wage penalty for the first kid, a 12% penalty for each additional child. For men, they get an increase of 9% for the first child. Expectations that mothers cannot be fully committed to both work and family, that the role of mother is incompatible with the role of the ideal worker. Women can be pushed out by being given less less demanding and less interesting work. Parenthood alone isn't the single cause of women's wealth gap. Social norms and structures encourage women to assume the primary responsibility for caregiving of children, of our elders, and men to focus on the careers. Motherhood is now the single best indicator that an unmarried middle-class woman will end up bankrupt. And middle-class women with college educations, 1 out of every 38 single mothers file for bankruptcy. And this is here in the States. I don't have much information about how it is in Europe. But just our capitalist system here does not really benefit caregivers. In issues in terms of wealth and what does wealth mean? And again, noticing the body, what happens as I read those stats and knowing that a good portion of us in this Zoom room have had that fantasy of, am I going to end up on the street? And that this can be an agitating talk. So just inviting breath and feeling the body, the community that's here. In support of how do we navigate this again, this bringing in the support of the practice from Trungpa Rinpoche in terms of wealth, how we hold wealth again from these teachings is different than how we hold wealth here in the States. Wealth is expressed through the qualities of basic dignity, confidence, and awareness, the full potential of one's inherent worth. Being rich in this sense means projecting an enriching presence. which is not a matter of material extravagance, but a possession of basic sanity and radiance. Basic sanity and radiance. This innate wealth is not something we manufacture through practice, but rather something that's already present. The goal is to uncover what we already possess. Once this begins to happen, we're able to appreciate and enjoy the richness of the world without forming the conditional attachments associated with impoverished measuring mind. He goes on to say, we view money as mother's milk, an elemental source of nourishment, and one will dry up if you try to hold on to it. Again, I'm aware of the potential to want to bring a lot of information here, and I think in the fall, I might do another day long on money, but I want to share a resource that was really helpful to me. It's a book by Brent Castle. It's not about the money. And Brent and Spencer Sherman, who also teaches about money at Spirit Rock, the book about looking at the eight archetypes and the ways in which we relate to money. And this is not specific to women, but I'm going to read these eight archetypes and just to listen. As I'll name it and then read a little bit about it to see what resonates. And you might find it be like, oh, my partner's like that, or I'm like that, or my mom was like that, or whatever. As a way of taking it out of our personality of me and mine, and I'm messed up, and that's why I relate to money this way. And to kind of, I found comfort in like, oh, there are these basic archetypes, and we lean towards some, and we lean away from others. And it can just be a helpful place to sort of start considering the way we hold our relationship to money, the lens through which we look can be perhaps seen through these eight archetypes. So I'm just going to read these. And then again, just kind of notice what lands and what doesn't. So the first of the eight types is the guardian. A quote, now that all your worry has proven such an unlucrative business, why not find a better job, from Hafaz. The core story of the guardian is being really afraid something's going to go wrong. This person will deal with their anxiety through saving, frugality, and being very conservative in whatever investing they may do, can get paralyzed with fear, even when it's clear about what the best decision is, a view that everything will fall apart unless I'm vigilant. There's haven't created a sense of emotional safety to thrive and enjoy in their lives. So that's the guardian. Second, the pleasure seeker, the quote, nothing lulls and inebriates like money. When you have a lot, the world seems a better place, quote from Chekhov. The core belief of the pleasure seeker is that they're hardwired to believe that more money equals more pleasure equals more happiness, and purchases are primarily for sensory enjoyment. They know how to enjoy life and money, again, for personal enjoyment. They save less than 5%. Debts exceed assets. Spending creates tension in relationships. Big sense of, I deserve this. Debt is a natural result of unchecked pleasure seeking. The third type, the idealist, the setup for a disillusionment. It's an idea about the truth that can never deliver the truth. Rather than question the ideal, the people who don't measure up to the ideal are questioned or even disdained. If poverty is idealized, then there's actually a war against those who have money, or a feeling of being righteous or more pure, and the huge gap from Gandhi. The core story of the idealist is being against money. Money isn't happiness. The system is corrupt, and feel shame and embarrassment regarding financial matters, painful emotion states, or wariness, skepticism, distrust. An aversion to money creates an imbalance and unsatisfying financial future. Again, this high idealism of how one doesn't, that cannot need money, or that money is bad, a real judgment around it. The saver, fourth. Money is emptiness. When people who have money are trying to get ultimate security from money, it is just impossible. This is from Sukhni Rinpoche. The core story of the saver is that money represents security, stability, protection, nourishment. Equate savings with survival. A lack of saving equals financial ruin. If I accumulate enough, I'll be safe. And that trap of the money equals safety. The star. No amount of money can make others speak well of you behind your back, the Chinese proverb. The core story of the star wants attention, recognition, prestige. For them, money buys love. May use it for their charitable giving, to appear a certain way, career choices, house, whatever the house is, the desire to impress people and to garner attention. More than 25 of the spending goes towards hair, beauty, clothing, seek to be acknowledged for generosity, alter investments, a yearning for admiration, painful states, that sense of also feeling fake, lonely. The innocent, another of the archetypes. The quote, procrastination and instant gratification are the two biggest reasons people don't save. Money is very mysterious and complex to people, and when something is complex, they tune it out. The core story of the innocents is that they're confused by money and have an ongoing sense of not enough. If they have it, they can't hold on to it. And if they don't have it, they feel like they never will. Unable to master money to the extent that they can create long-term financial self-sufficiency, living paycheck to paycheck. Often feel victimized. Again, noticing what resonates, what doesn't. If it feels overwhelming, let my voice just be sound. The mantra of the innocent, life is too short to worry about money, let someone else worry about it. And that coupled with there's never enough. Another category which may resonate for women in this group here, the caretaker. It doesn't matter how much you have or don't have, just the burden of having to hand out money all the time can be hard on the psyche, says David Wyatt. The core story of the caretaker, putting the needs of others first, believing that people who rely upon them financially would be destitute without them. It can end up paying for everything, bills, grocery bills, electric bills, can be directed to the family or helping underprivileged in general. It's not just a self-sufficient, but that others, like I'm sufficient for others. Believe that money is best when shared and used for others. And we can hear, hopefully, a sense of where there is strength in these archetypes and where there's work to be done, what the edge is. The dark side of the caretaker is think that those are not competent or generous. Others are not competent, which can enable people, which then leads to resentment. And the final of this 8 archetype system is the empire building. From Thich Nhat Hanh, 3 steps for the businessman or woman who is caught, does not have time in his to live his life to love or take care of his beloved. First, go back to himself and practice so he or she is able to relax and enjoy the here and now, and then bring joy back to the partner and family, and then bring back business. Don't separate business and spirituality anymore. The core story of this empire builder is deep inside, they believe that they will be somebody when they achieve this vision, when they get to this mark, then they will be somebody and be recognized. They often make lasting contributions. They can be visionaries, but they can also be lonely in the sense of grandiosity, the wanting mind that there is never enough, with that the sense that creating an empire will truly bring happiness. Tolan, could you bring up the Calvin and Hobbes cartoon? Please. Just to bring a little levity here. Some of you may not be familiar with this, with Calvin and Hobbes cartoon. I used to love them. It's Calvin's the little boy, 6-year-old, and his stuffed tiger that comes to life when it's just Calvin. And Calvin is saying, getting is better than having. When you get something, it's new and exciting. Then when you have something, you take it for granted and it's boring, Hobbes. But everything you get turns into something you have. Well, that's why you always need to get new things. Okay, Calvin, waste and want, that's my motto. And Hobbes says, I feel like I'm in some stockholder's dream. The next cartoon, again, Calvin and Hobbes, and Calvin says, if you could wish for anything, what would it be? A big sunny field to be in. A stupid field? You've got that now. Think big, riches, power, pretend you could have anything. And then Hobbes is all snuggled down and Calvin says, actually, it's hard to argue with someone who looks so happy. So thank you, Tolan, for pulling those up. So that was a lot, and I fear to say I could keep going, but I'm going to pause and I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And just to check in how the body's doing, if there's a sense of curiosity or dread. Whatever's present, just noticing, making space for that and holding, you know, we're all in this circle together at different stages of our relationship to money. And what would it feel like in this moment to have a sense of enoughness? I am enough. I have enough. And this is not I'm not saying this in any way to disregard what are very real financial concerns for many of us, particularly folks in the Bay Area. It's so expensive. London, I know, it's hugely expensive. New York, it is hard. There is a reality. Brooklyn, we're told that there's a reality to paying bills and being comfortable and wanting to acknowledge there's not, this is not, think you have enough and therefore you will. But it's about challenging where a sense of scarcity really gets in our way. And what do we actually feel is scarce? Sometimes it literally is money and changes need to be made. And sometimes it can be a more deeper landed, rooted more in a sense of self-loathing or rejecting of our own selves. And it's to that place that I'd like to be speaking to. What would it be like to feel like we have enough? You're good enough. What would it be like to feel into, imagine that sense of enoughness? And just to notice, even as you say the words or hear me say them, I have enough, I am enough. What happens? If there's an aversion, pushback, maybe you don't know what you're talking about, whatever. Or, oh, what would that be like to try that on as some familiar sweet cloak that's super soft as a way of tending to the part of us that tells us we're not good enough in some way. We don't have enough, not pretty enough, not smart enough, not loved enough, didn't get enough when we were kids, don't have enough now. The orientation to scarcity, what happens if we imagine the possibility of a lens of sustainability, to borrow from Lynn Twist, who works a lot with money, to imagine our lives as sustainable. Again, some of us that are in the territory of more financial precariousness, what steps, how do we move into, what would it be like to imagine embodying a sense of sustainability, of enoughness? To feel in terms of an ability to relate to money as a flow, a sense of currency. And then that flow, again, to borrow from John O'Donohue, I want to live my life as the river, surprised by its own unfolding. That fluidity, can we hold or invite in a sense of relating to money as currency, as flow, as inherent in of itself, as blameless? Pulling apart, or perhaps noticing the stories we put upon money, our own inheritance of attitude and orientation around money that we have from our ancestors. What works, what doesn't. Whatever a person frequently thinks and reflects upon, that will become the inclination of the mind. How do we orient the mind into a place of sustainability, sufficiency, and enoughness in relationship to our finances? Again, what would it be like to hold our relationship to money? Let me rephrase it. To have the relationship we have to money be held in the Dharma. In these teachings that I didn't quite get to about generosity and integrity and mindfulness. Really, there's a lot more that I could go into, but I want to pause there. So thanks for your kind attention to that. And we'd love to open this up to see what comes up for you as in the considering this idea of money, which can be stressful.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.